Fu Young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi. Mm. Sushi.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Sushi, sushi, sushi.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
It's so musty. Well, gag me with a furball.
The Living Stink Tech Show.
You guys are so worthy. I have nothing to compare you to.
How dare you stand there and criticize? Do you think I don't know what's going on around here? Do you want to make your own choices? Or do you want the state to make those choices for you?
Well, the Linux League Tech Show.
No one else, an idiot. And I played three intros. There's still two more coming.
There's two more coming?
Two more coming.
What are you doing? All of the
I didn't know what I was doing.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show.
The Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up. And take it away. Take it away.
Good evening.
It's been getting close to the Halloween show. Good evening.
Good evening. Yeah, welcome to another episode, action-packed episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. Alan, what number are we at?
Dun, 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 dun.
You know, I have no clue. I didn't look it up before the show.
104.
104.
You could have looked right up there where it says. But no.
I can't even read that monitor. That's why I had to get up to get to read it anyways. I need new glasses. Unfortunately, I think I'm actually hitting the point where, like, you know, the small text, you have to, like, sort of tilt at a weird angle to actually read anymore. So I think, you know, it's not going to be much longer before I've got to put the bifocals on.
Right.
Damn youngins, you guys.
So what's...
Coke bottle glasses for Alan.
Yeah. Well, not Coke bottles, but...
You'll have the Braille keyboard next week. Come in touching everybody's face.
I can see you with my fingers.
Alan, that's not my face. What a big nose you have.
Just as a PSA, October 9th is National Porn Sunday for people in Ohio. Just so you know.
What is that? Is that porn-free Sunday? Or is
it's a bunch of churches that get together and discuss how porn affects society. But
wow.
I just thought, you know, National Porn Sunday sounded good.
This week, huh?
The 9th.
That would be this weekend.
That would be this weekend, yes.
What are you going to do to celebrate?
Watch some porn.
Yeah. Yay. Now, Link, you're a big porn man down there over there, right? Yes. Obviously, he is.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's been an action-packed week for everybody, I trust?
Not really.
No?
No. Typical boring, you know, get up, go to work shit.
Pat isn't with us just yet. He'll be chiming in around 9 o'clock. Just as we get right into the thick of the conversation with Nathan Ingersoll on Enlightenment DR17,
yeah.
Pat'll barge right in and interrupt everything.
And probably.
That's the way that'll go. Last week, I thought it was a really good show. What I really find interesting these days is the guests that we're getting on are really great guests, and even more, they've actually listened to our show in the past.
I was going to say that's why you think they're great guests because they mentioned that they've actually listened to our show once or twice.
Well, it makes it a lot more fun, I think, and it's exciting. And what's even better?
Oh, absolutely.
Is the guests not only just come on the show, but they're in the chat. They come on the forum and they answer questions or stuff. And, you know, it's not just they show up, talk about some stuff, which, you know, those guests that do in the past have done that have been really great, and we really appreciate it. But a lot of the more recent guests, they've been participating in other ways, and I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's really cool. That makes a big difference.
Yeah, it is. It is fantastic. This week.
So what have you been up to this week, Dan?
Well, this week with today with the Techie is entering its third week. So I don't know if you've been listening to any of those, Link, but I've listened to all of them.
I did listen to a few. I thought yours was really good. There were a couple that were very Microsoft-y, sort of, and that, of course, didn't hold my interest very long. But for the most part, they're pretty good.
Did you listen to that one on Vista? It was the one that was just the other. Well, it was a really good one. But they didn't talk just about Vista.
The only thing with yours is you. It sounded like you were like speed reading the whole thing.
Actually, I wrote it out beforehand.
you were like, because about a quarter of the way through, I lost track of what the hell you were even going for.
I realized that. I was like, man, they want this in like 5 to 15 minutes, and I've already, you know, I was like, so my next one, I just did a backup episode. I didn't write it out beforehand, and it goes a lot slower. And I really talked about only two things instead of three or four, but they had mentioned the different versions of Vista that'll be available. And one of the things that I was curious about is they're doing the same thing that they did with like XP Lite in other countries, that you can only
27 different versions.
Yeah, you can only run three applications at a time. And I'm wondering if you're running your antivirus and your anti-spyware application, and
allows you to run IE. That's the only other thing.
Yeah,
you can
I
do.
Mean. A lot of times you fire up a Windows machine, and it's got, like your manufacturer of your computer will throw in, like, some keyboard function and all those little processes that pop up in the system tray. Will that interfere with what applications you're allowed to run? Just curious.
Could be. Well, knowing them, probably.
Now, I do have a question for our wonderful audience out there, or maybe you guys have an answer to this. We've got a partial answer. Over our lug list, a fellow lugger wanted to know how they can execute an application upon logging out of X, and they were using one of the X Display Managers. Now, I know, because I don't use X Display Manager or GDM or KDM, because I just go into run level, what I consider run level 3, which is without X. And then run start X. Now, if you and your X init RC or your X session file, when you have your scripts in there, any applications that you want to have running in conjunction with your window manager, you typically start or you'd execute before you get to the point of your window manager. So if you wanted an X term, if you wanted to run X screensaver, whatever, you put those in your X init RC or X session dot X session file before you come to your window manager. Now, typically, you might see your window manager call with the exec, which is execute. What the script will do is it will read all the way up until it finds that exec, and that's the last thing it'll read. So if that's your window manager, it'll start your window manager. When your window manager exits, it just closes the script. But if you call your window manager through there, if you would just put FEWM, or Fluxbox, or Window Maker, or whatever your window manager is, call it without the exec, and then you would add other scripts or executables after that, what will happen is they will get processed after the window manager closes. So if you close your window manager, it'll probably initiate the log out of X, and it can run those extra applications that are after your window manager. So long as you don't have exec, because exec will cut off the processing of any other application, or an ampersand after your window manager, because then it will process the rest of those. It'll background your window manager and process those at the same time, which is probably what you wouldn't want. Now, the question I have is, since I don't use a display manager, where is that X that, if you wanted to set this globally, what would you do with it? There's probably an X session file somewhere as global. What's that called? I looked in the X11 directory under the Etsy directory, and that there's a lot of scripts in there. I wasn't sure if it was just as simple as adding it to the end of that X session in there, or is there a specific one that you should add it to?
Good question.
Don't all answer at once. Yeah, but good if you question. Got, if you have an answer there, Link, or anybody else, you can email it to us at the Tech Show. Put it on the forum, even better. Be interested to know, because again, I'm not up on my display managers as much as I should be.
Well, so much for video tonight. My battery went dead.
Yeah.
Oops.
And on, you know, speaking of other things going on with Tech Show, we are now.
Already?
Huh? What?
Huh?
What? I heard somebody say something, but I.
Did you say something, Link?
No.
Okay.
I could, though.
Well, hold on one second. And, yeah. Another thing that we started doing this week, we are now accepting gifts, formerly called donations. We don't call them donations because they are not going to be tax deductible on your end, and I guess we have to call that a gift, so to speak. You can go on our site at tllts.info. There is a gift button there. You can pay through PayPal if you want to. You know, of course, we'll always accept it. We're not looking for handouts, or they're not saying that you absolutely have to provide a gift to the Tech Show, but if you want to, people have asked in the past, and we've now made that service available to you for your pleasure.
Click away.
Yeah. And we're also putting together some DVDs and CDs of previous shows and stuff like that, which we will be selling somehow, in one way or another.
The DVDs will probably have video on them as well.
Yeah.
Hopefully more than just the CBS camera.
Yeah, so you can see, you know, what kind of retarded antics go on, you know, in full stereoscopic vision while the show's going. That's, of course, while we're all in the studio, which, you know, happens once in a while.
Yeah, eventually we're all going to get back in here again.
That's right. I found out this week that there is a difference between FSCK and MKFS. You want to run one of those when checking a file system, not the other, because you'll check that file system right out of here. But the good news was it gave me the opportunity to install Ubuntu on my wife's laptop, and that went off without a hitch. That went pretty smoothly.
What does she think about Ubuntu as opposed to what was she like running Debian before, right?
Right. She doesn't notice the difference, really, because they're both right. It's running. You know, she likes KDE, so that's on there. It's running.
Except it's more brown.
Yeah. No. because I took over her configuration from KDE, and it's got it. Yeah. The big difference is the login window. When you first bring it up, the graphical display, what does it run? GDM for Ubuntu. And that's brown.
Yeah. I haven't run Ubuntu in a while because I put the Mac, the iMac away.
What I did is when I first installed Ubuntu, I just went and then installed the Kubuntu desktop.
Okay.
And it brought down the KDE, but not all of the KDE that I would like wasn't there or that she was accustomed to. So it was like almost a stripped down version of KDE. It was missing a lot of stuff that I had to actually go back in and add.
Okay.
So why didn't you just install Kubuntu instead?
Because I heard that Kubuntu was kind of flaky compared to Ubuntu. So I knew you can do the Kubuntu stuff after you installed Ubuntu. Because they kind of merged their packages together or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, hey, when it's all said and done, it was kind of no problem. Another issue that I did have with it was, which I find kind of troublesome, is when you want to install all the video codecs and stuff like that, when you click on, and I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, you add the extra repositories than the, Marilat repository, which will give you all those extras to be able to run, like, MPlayer and the Win32 codecs. I noticed that
all the good stuff.
Yeah. You had to actually specifically check all the good stuff. Because you pull down MPlayer and you wouldn't necessarily have, AVI playback.
Okay.
So you might have to get that extra. I forget the exact specifics, but it was a little more steps than I thought I had to do when I set up my other workstation. But anyway, you know, in a couple hours I had a fully running Ubuntu distribution that was back to what she was doing with Debian.
Cool.
And I'm eagerly awaiting for Breezy to be released. It's supposed to be released in October, but...
Is that Breezy Badger or whatever?
Yeah, Breezy Badger. Because that ties in with another thing that was brought up on the forums, was if you're using a package management system, what happens if you want to add repositories outside your distribution's repositories? Again, example would be using the Marilat repositories with Ubuntu or Debian for some of those video applications or video codecs. And one of the problems that I'm running into with Ubuntu right now, because a lot of the Marilat packages, for instance, Cinelera, I think, is one of them, have been compiled with a different version of libc6, that it won't let you install those packages unless you force it or tell it to ignore that specific dependency, and then you run into other issues or other flakiness. Not that it's going to destroy your system if you force something like that. I mean, if you force a critical package, it could, but not like Cinelera, because you could just remove that. But I guess Breezy Badger supposed to have an updated version of libc6 and glib, which will take care of that requirement. I'm excitedly awaiting. They're doing the beta testing now. People are saying it's great. Some people are saying they're having problems. That's to be expected.
Well, anything that's in beta, so you're always going to have some problems. It's the reason for beta.
Yep. Speaking of that, you know, I still haven't installed Slackware 10.2 yet.
That makes two of us. I'm thinking about doing it this week.
I have it on the
laptop.
I've
been procrastinating.
Yeah, I have it on the laptop, but shy of being here at the show, I haven't really used the laptop lately, so I don't really have much to say about it, except it seems to be very nice.
Is it running?
Yeah.
Running nicely?
Yeah, I haven't had any problems. Like I said, I've only used it for like 2 hours at the show here. And I didn't use it last week because I had all my other machines up, so I still have to put all the MPlayer and stuff back on here. I didn't put those back on yet.
See, I'm concerned about upgrading on the server because I don't want to go through the hassle if I have to reinstall QMail or Mailman or anything else like that.
I
have to recompile.
For the server, you may not need to. I mean, it's running fine. I have to look to see whether or not there's any security or newer packages that you really need on there.
I don't think there is because they'll probably support 10.1 for a couple of years yet.
For quite a while, yeah.
I think, but who knows? What's your hold up there, Link? You're not doing anything. You're home all the time.
Yeah, sure. No, this week, what I did this week was I went out and got some broadband voice over IP service.
Now, are you running your own Access server over there, Link?
Not yet. I have a box for it, and I have the card that you got me, but I have not set up Asterisk at home or anything like that. What I did was, for those of you who don't know, we use a voice over IP service on the tech show called Broad Voice, which you can get at broadvoice.com. And it's been running so well for us there that I, actually went over and looked at their website, and they have a fantastic price scheme. And that is that you can get unlimited in-state voice over IP service for $10 a month. And that's, that beats my phone bill by a mile. And the fact that we've been using it at the tech show for quite some time now proves that it actually works. So I decided that I was going to do that and switch my service over. And even though I haven't had my regular phone server, my POTS line, shut off yet, Broad Voice is still, performing in a stellar fashion. I really like all the options and services that they give you. You know, all those things that you pay 30 or 40 cents here for on a regular POTS line, that's all included free with Broad Voice. And they do really cool stuff like When you get a call, I have it set up so that if I get a call on my phone number, it automatically emails me with the person, you know, the number of the person who called me. If I'm busy on the phone talking, it automatically pushes the person in the voicemail and stuff like that. You can download your voicemail as a WAV file from anywhere off the internet. It's really nice. I like it.
See, if you were smart, what you would have done is you would have gone in and just added yourself onto Pat's account, and then you wouldn't have to pay anything.
Right, yeah, exactly. I bet he would have appreciated that.
No problem.
Yeah, I actually have to look into that as well, but I want to really set up another Asterisk server over at the house to do it, just to play around with it. Because, unfortunately, I can't get my wife to keep remembering that to use my cell phone to use long distance because it's, like, paid for, rather than using the regular phone. So I keep getting these, like, huge long distance bills.
Well, see, now that's another really good thing about BroadVoice in that the anything in like, I live in Pennsylvania, so anything in Pennsylvania is a local number for me with BroadVoice.
Yeah.
Regardless of where it is in Pennsylvania. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's stuff that's really, really long distance for me on my POTS line, but with BroadVoice, it's just a local call. However, out of state, the price is a whole 3.9 cents a minute, which beats my current long distance carrier as well.
Yeah.
So you really can't go bad. You know, you can't go wrong with that kind of stuff. It's nice.
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing, Pat?
Hey, it's Pat.
I made it.
And on time, too.
We're just about to close up the show.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Good night,
shop.
No, just
good night.
And now that Pat's here, thanks for listening. Good night.
How you doing,
so you're
Pat?
Talking about your... good. You're talking. Link's talking about his VoIP provider.
Yeah, BroadVoice, man. Yeah.
You taking it?
Oh, it's good stuff, man.
That's
good
cool.
stuff. Now, what
did
was
you get the $20?
I got the. It's a $10 for unlimited in-state calling, with 3.9 cents a minute for long distance, out-of-state long distance stuff. What is the plan that we have for the tech show?
We got the bare bones minimum plan, which is $5.95 a month.
Okay. See, now I didn't even see that on their website, so.
It's called Bring Your Own Device or something like that.
Well, that's what I have, but it's still $10 a month.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
$10
we
a month,
probably upgrade.
Unlimited.
I was thinking we could upgrade to the $20 plan, and that'll give us unlimited to North America, Western Europe, Australia, Japan. So we'll probably do that eventually.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
All right, are we done with BroadVoice now? Go ahead.
Just one quick thing. Last week we were talking to Dan Dennedy. He was mentioning that there were currently no DVD authoring programs. They use the XML files that are generated out of Kino. Well, I got an email from Varul Okan, which is the guy that does QDVD author, and he says that he is working on implementing those files. And the reason why he done it sooner was that when you use the XML files generated out of there, it's not just one file. There are other files that you have to import besides the one XML file. But he is in the process of implementing that, so... He just asked me to pass that along to everybody.
Maybe we can get him back on again soon. He was a great guest.
Yeah, he seems like he wants to talk again. He's got a whole bunch of new features that he's added since the last time we talked to him.
We'll set that up, man.
Yeah, we'll talk to him.
And speaking of guests, we got an exciting guest tonight from Enlightenment DR17, Nathan Ingersoll. I believe he is one of the main developers there, right, Nathan?
The way you say that, there should
yeah,
be like music
that.
Coming in behind you.
Yeah,
on
we need music. All right. Now I've been using Enlightenment DR17 for about a month and a half now, and I'm really enjoying it. So I'll turn it over to you now, Nathan.
Well, I mean, I could just run through a quick introduction into what the difference is with Enlightenment 17 versus other versions, and the big thing has been theme formats. And we've gone from using your old-style flat text file describing how you're going to lay your different images to get your borders and whatnot into these bundled files called edge files. They basically contain it's a binary file that has a description of the layout, and you can do relative layouts and absolute coordinates within with images within the edge files assigned area. And with that, it allows you to do some animation as well. There's a bit of a scripting language built into it so that if you want to do some more powerful techniques, you can run with that and say, for instance, you mouse into your window and a signal gets sent that says mouse in, and your window can play whatever animation it likes at that point. For example, the default border has a little glint of yellow of gold, kind of like a sunrise look that comes across the border as you mouse into it, so you can quickly see where your focus is and get some nice little effects that way. So that's the primary focus. It's been a long time coming because a lot of this is done in a series of libraries, and it has been a little bit of a learning experience as it's been developed. There was an earlier version of Enlightenment 17 that was actually scrapped about 2 years ago. It was basically said, okay, we learned from our mistakes on this one, and we're going to go ahead and take that and redesign and start from scratch. There was some discussion on whether or not we could have taken the existing source code base and refined it to get what we wanted, and that could have been a possibility at the time, but the direction was going to change so much that it didn't seem like a good choice, and so we had a rewrite. And I'm sure you've all heard the little jokes on Slashdot about, you know, Enlightenment 17 being released at the same time as Duke Nukem or whatever, you know, all the different vaporwares that are going to come out. That's a favorite joke of the trolls and whatnot, but it's getting there, and I think we're kind of approaching that alpha level that people can sort of start testing out. We've got some pre-release snapshots posted on freedesktop.org for people that don't feel like checking out CVS code. There's also a live CD at elivecd.org, which has it's just a Morphix-based live CD and has Enlightenment version 16 and Enlightenment version 17. You can download those or download that disc and try both of those out. So it's pretty handy, especially if you don't really feel like installing the whole thing on your or whatever you've got going on there. So, and then along with the basic, since everything has been kind of separated out and abstracted into libraries, you can go ahead and design your own application using those libraries and the edge file format, so that you can do. For instance, the X10 Lite client looks like something that could be whipped together in an Edge, except you could probably get a little bit more animation out of it. Instead of just the static transitions from a click down and a click up where you're flipping images, you can actually do a series of images to show an animation. So, and the other thing about that is that the animations for moving images, so that it's not just in place, you know, you click on a button, it stays put. You could, if you really wanted to, have a version where you clicked on the button and it hopped to a completely different location, like chasing the button kind of situation, if you wanted to do something like that. Not that most people would, but there's other useful things that you can do with that, and as far as like sliding buttons in and getting them closer to your mouse when it seems appropriate, or, you know, things like that. So, I mean, basically, that's the foundation for what we're doing. There's a Canvas library that's built on top of that is primarily focused on fast image rendering and blitting to the screen. It doesn't do vector graphics so much. It just primarily focuses on images, and it's set up so that it can have different back ends. So right now, the default is a software blending. There's alpha blending within it. But there's a back end now for GL if you want to try hardware, and there's also another one for X render. for performance reasons, it's primarily stuck on software right now. People don't generally want to use the other engines if they don't have to. GL wins out if you're using it on like a really large window, like the background. If you're drawing a whole bunch of animations on your background, then GL is going to be a lot faster. But when you're doing a lot of different separate windows and drawing small borders, then software actually tends to be a little bit faster. And then the XRender engine just went in this week, so it's not exactly the fastest one out there. And I'm not entirely sure if that's because of the nature of XRender or the drivers that are currently available that we've been testing on, or if that is some optimization stuff that needs to happen on our end. But the software one is right now the best. So also has the best image quality.
Now, you had said that you've moved from a text-based flat file configuration to a binary configuration file.
Yep.
What is the advantage for that? Is it just speed, or?
There's a few advantages. Speed is definitely one of them. It's, you can do a lot of nice compression things that you can't normally do very easily. For instance, the format that it's saved in, we have set it up so, and when I say we, it's primarily Carson Heitz, Lord of the Rasterman. He did a lot of the work on the image blending and compression, and I've done a little bit of work on some of optimization routines for like AltaVec and things like that, but he's the big primary author on most of that low-level stuff. And, for instance, you can do lossy compression with an alpha channel, and it just uses libjpeg, and you say you give it a PNG that has alpha in it, it will save the as a flat RGB image into it as one channel, and then it pulls out the alpha channel and stores that in the file as a separate channel in the Edge file. So you've just gotten lossy from JPEG, but you can still keep your alpha channel in there as well, which is really nice to get higher compression. And a lot of times you can throw away portions of an image, especially if it's an animation, and people won't notice it because it's on the screen so little. And those are a couple of the advantages. Another advantage is you can keep all of your information together in your theme. As far as you have your layout data together with your image data, and you just file out my new theme and you hand them your, you know, put it up for download, one file. You could do it with a tarball, but then they can move stuff around and generally mess it up pretty easily, which has been an experience with the version 16, which did that method. With this method, you hand them the file, and they pretty much just put it in place and use it.
And I've noticed that in using it, I mean, first off, DR17, you're still in some heavy development with this. And while it's fully functional, and I've been using it pretty much without a problem, the configuration tools for it are not nice yet, or are they still being worked
on? Not a lot of them. There's still a lot of work going on in configuration tools, especially. The to-do list for the actual window manager is still fairly large. There's a lot of features and bugs and various, you know, would be nice items to have on that list. And, you know, they're slowly getting knocked off. And configuration tools are definitely part of that list. There are some temporary configuration tools in place. They're not considered the final tools because the final tools will cut down on some of the extra dependencies and make the build a little bit easier. And will actually ship with Enlightenment itself, the window manager. Right now they're separately packaged. And it's primarily so that people can still use it, try to develop it, and test out different options that are available without having to alter the source code for every little change. So, I mean, you've got things like Enlightenment Remote, which is a command line tool that you can say, okay, set my focus type to mouse focus, floppy focus, or click to focus with that. And then you have a couple other GUI tools. There's a couple for, there's one for backgrounds and another for icons. and third one for setting up your menus and your startup items. And while they are fairly functional, they're not the end-all or be-all of configuration tools. So they're just kind of a temporary placeholder for right now.
Now, what is your target audience for Enlightenment? I've heard some people have said it's for it's trying to be an artistic type environment. I mean, it's definitely fast and lightweight, but you seem to be doing an awful lot to make it look pretty too.
Yeah, the idea here is that you shouldn't have to sacrifice eye candy to use a normal window manager. And while I know a lot of people really like other window managers like Fluxbox and Window Maker, and I have nothing against those projects either. They definitely have their place. This one's trying to kind of hit that in-between spot between those, we're a window manager projects and we're a full-blown desktop projects, and trying to stay as light as possible while doing that, not consuming all of your resources, because you shouldn't have to use all of your resources to manage your windows. Not actually getting your work done. So it's kind of trying to hit that in-between spot. There is some goal to maintain the low-end scalability of the various libraries and such, so that they can work on embedded applications. Last year, I had a fair number of the libraries running on a low-end iPack, and they worked pretty well. They actually scored a higher benchmark than running things over the network does, say like a 10 megabit network. 100 megabit, the network could probably win out. But the goal here is to try to keep things as flexible as possible, let people use it how they see it fitting into their work environment, provide as much options as we can. I mean, that's one thing Enlightenment has kind of always been about, is providing options to the user. It's kind of been like the antithesis to GNOME these days, who is kind of going the route of present as few options to the user as necessary so that they don't get confused or overwhelmed with options. This is kind of the other side, where you're an experienced user. Here's some options. People can help you tweak it if they want, but if the choice is yours, we're not going to force a certain set of decisions on the users.
Now, is Elicit and Engage and ERSS, are those all part of Enlightenment DR17, or are they exist in 16 also?
You can use those in any window manager. They are just separate applications. They use the libraries that are provided for the window manager, but they are designed for portability. There's no reason that you need to use Enlightenment 17. A lot of people use them with Enlightenment 16 or Fluxbox or, whatever their choice of window manager is. There is actually a couple developers that don't really like using Enlightenment 16, so if they're not in the mood to use version 17, or they are working on a bug that causes it to crash or something like that, they'll use Fluxbox or OpenBox. Personally, I like Enlightenment version 16 over those, but everything is pretty much trying to follow, say, free desktop standards as much as we can with what we're trying to do, maintain interoperability, and and for example, we've had a more recent developer in the last 2 or 3 years, Kim Wolders, who's in Europe, and he has updated Enlightenment version 16 so that it will, it can have its own compositing manager in it now, so that it can do stuff like XCOMP Manager can and other, but it's native to the window manager, so it's not a separate download. And updated that version so that it can play nice with modern KDE and GNOME applications, following the NetWM standards that have been laid out. So, just kind of giving that a little bit of an overhaul and up and modernizing, because it had been left to the side while version 6.17 was being worked on. But it's still, that one is also a viable application for people that are interested in a stable but configurable window manager.
Now, Engage is an application launcher or a dock, so to speak.
Yep.
And it seems to be pretty well, pretty heavily influenced by Apple's dock.
Yep. Yeah, that one is, there's been a few different launchers in the history of Enlightenment development. I think probably four or five, well, at least three or four. And Engage is one of the ones that's kind of stuck around a little bit longer. People seem to really like that OS X effect with the icons that grow. I used it for a while. I don't use it that much right now because I actually do use OS X quite a bit. So it seems a little bit redundant when I have both of those running at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So
you're actually running Engage. You were running Engage on OS X?
Yeah. I have X11 running full screen on OS X, and I switch back and forth between the two environments depending on what I'm doing. Because I like using the Enlightenment environment a lot better when I'm working with a lot of terminals, which is how I spend most of my day. And so I, you know, when I have to do more graphical stuff, web-based and, you know, GUI applications, then I just can switch over quickly to the OS X side. One of the big things with Enlightenment 17 and the libraries is keeping portability. All of the libraries have been built on most POSIX compliant operating systems out there. Some of it has even been ported to Windows at different times. Raster or Karsten was working for a company that did cell phones using one of our libraries as their canvas, and that was actually running off of a Windows Pocket PC type OS. So portability has been a pretty big thing.
So are you running 17 or 16 on OS X?
Right now I'm running 17.
Oh.
I have both installed. I switch between them depending. Because, you know, sometimes you run into a bug you're trying to fix that causes crashes, and it's pretty hard when your window manager crashes to keep up your debugging flow there. So it's kind of nice you can run Enlightenment 16 and open up 17 in XNest and plug away at it and let it crash all you want.
So do you have 17 installed in like a separate area than 16? I mean, how are you, how do you run both?
Well, they actually use different prefixes for where they install their stuff. As of, I think, 16.7, they can change the default directory to E16. So it's like user bin E16 instead of user bin Enlightenment. So you can have user bin Enlightenment be your version 17 and user bin 16 to be your older version.
So if you're installing this via packages, chances are you're not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if the packages have updated to the latest version of 16 in a while. A lot of the distributions just kind of dropped support for 16 after it hadn't been updated for a while. Stopped packaging it. So unfortunately, that makes it a lot harder for the end user. Or they have older packages that haven't been updated. Makes it a little bit harder.
Now I heard,
and if you're using Debian, I don't think that they'll sit together nicely right now.
The 16 and the 17, right?
Right.
Yeah. Because I noticed that when I have it's probably a Debian package I have, but when I look at the executable, it's just Enlightenment. So I was thinking that if I wanted to check out Enlightenment 16, because I haven't looked at that in a long time, I probably couldn't get them both installed on the same system. That one over.
The other thing you could do, if you're building from source, the default install path is user local, whereas the package is going to be just user. So you wouldn't have to worry about things getting overwritten, and they'd play nice together then.
But they don't have the same. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, when I fire up Enlightenment here, it's just I type in Enlightenment. But if I do Enlightenment DR16, isn't it going to have the same executable name?
Yeah, you'd have to give the full path to the executable.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
User bin Enlightenment. That would get around it. And they use separate configuration directories, so they won't touch each other's config files. It's .e for E17 and .enlightenment for E16, or .e16, depending on the version you're using.
Now, I've heard that, and you have, I think you said this before, that instead of just having a static background, that you could actually have some kind of animation going on in your as your desktop picture.
You can do that.
Do you have any examples of that? Because I just looked briefly on the website, and I didn't really see anything.
I can say if you check out get-e.org, there is a set of backgrounds, and I believe two or three of them have... one is a very complex animation that will just absolutely kill your processor if you really want to try it out, but it's more of a proof of concept. And there's another couple that are not quite so intense that usually sit around using like 1 or 2% of your CPU on a more modern system. There's one called Shiny Reflection, and that's basically just kind of like a cracked mud looking background with the Enlightenment logo and two bars going off to the side, and the bars will glint and the logo will highlight occasionally just to kind of show that you've got activity and everything is still responding. And that's just an example of a simple animation that runs and doesn't take too much to do.
Now, how hard is it to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
How hard is it to create a dynamic background like that?
It's really not that difficult. The format that we use is a binary format, but there's a text file that you write the description in. And in the text file, you declare states. A state is usually really simple, a name, the coordinates that it sits at, upper left and lower right hand corner coordinates, and that's about it. So if you have two different states, you can set up a signal that when that signal comes, it flips between the states. So if I have state unhighlighted and state highlighted, and there's a little section for programs, you probably need like a 5 or 6 line example program, and it will receive a signal from your application like highlight, and when it sees that signal, it'll say flip state from state unhighlighted to state highlighted, and it will actually automatically blend the images from one to the other based on some parameters, like you can set tween images, which are to be flipped between to get to that next state. So it's the hardest part is rendering the series of images to get a nice smooth animation. But if you're using something like Blender or Lightwave or one of the other 3D packages, they usually have something designed into them for generating a series of images to do an animation.
Is that what you use, Blender?
I do use Blender a little bit. A lot of our better stuff is done by Raster because he has a copy of Lightwave, which is supposed to be pretty nice. I don't have that kind of money. to go out and buy Lightwave on my own. So, but yeah, I use Blender when I'm doing animation.
So, how big is the development team in DR17?
Right now, I think we have. It really varies. There's usually only about 6 people that are active at any given time, but we have a lot more people that have access to develop at any given time. No one works on this project full time. It's all done in spare time for people, and so we, you know, can't always count on saying, okay, we're going to have this many people. If we add one more developer, we're going to have, you know, 10 developers now or something like that. Because usually it's like, okay, I've got time to work on something now. I'm going to commit a few thousand lines of code in a weekend or something, and then disappear for a month or two. So. But there's pretty much a steady commit list of 5, 6, 7 people that are, we have currently 66 developers listed, but yeah, 5 to 6 are usually active at any given time. And we're always looking for more people to help out, so. Yeah.
So where do you see Enlightenment going then? With 'cause you had mentioned that since there has been little development on 16, Do you think 17 is going to, or do you hope the 17 is going to relight the fire under the user base out there and hopefully bring enlightenment back into more standard use or more widespread
use? Yeah, that's
use?
The idea. Yeah, I mean, we're definitely hoping for that. Enlightenment had a pretty big user base with version 16, especially when it was the GNOME default window manager. A lot of people used Enlightenment and didn't even really realize that they were using it. Since then, you know, people have been, there was a pretty big push around 2000, and people were excited for 17 to come out. And since that time, you know, we've had a pretty big downturn in the economy. People that were employed to work on it were no longer employed to work on it, and, you know, moved on to bigger and better things, as they may say. And so things have slowed down quite a bit, but as it progresses here, we're hoping people will get back into it and, you know, get some good ideas for version 18 when it comes out. And at least with version 18, we've done all this foundation work on the libraries, which has been most of the time spent on this. So that should hopefully go a little bit quicker because we can expand those libraries to meet new needs and expand the window manager base to improve. For example, one feature we've talked about with version 18 is better support for XRender and Composite. That's not really a big priority for version 17 because the feeling is that we need to give them some time to stabilize a little bit. And we're doing a lot of experimental stuff on our end. Between our experimental stuff and their experimental stuff, it could get a little bit nasty. So give them some time and us some time to settle out, get stable, and then try to incorporate some of those features a little bit more.
So when do you guys have an idea as when you would have a finalized version of 17, not an alpha or early beta, but something that, you know, is, hey, this is good to go, all the configuration tools are there, rock on?
Unfortunately, that's a no. It's pretty hard when we're pretty all doing it in our spare time to get a good estimate because it all depends on life and the whims of our employers as to how much time we really have to work on it. It's basically been a work in progress for years. Everyone asks, when's it coming out, when's it coming out? And the best we can say is as soon as we have enough time to finish this list of bugs. So we kind of have a series of goals laid out that when they get knocked down to a reasonable amount, then we'll be hitting the alpha and beta stages. And then if things show themselves to be stable at that point, then we'll see a release. But it's going to be a little bit of a slow progress, I think, but we'll get there.
Now, I'm looking here at the GetE.org site, mm-hmm. and there's something here called Evidence. It looks like, is Evidence a file manager?
Yeah, a file manager. Some people really like it a lot. Other people seem to find it kind of annoying. It's extremes on that one. If you go to evidence.sourceforge.net, there is a set of screenshots that show it in action. It's a separate project, but it uses a lot of the Enlightenment libraries and has incorporated some of the code from the Enlightenment project into it. And the developer is pretty close and does stuff on Enlightenment itself, too. So it's kind of like a branch project at this point and may come under the umbrella of the Enlightenment project at some point, but it's not there right now. I've used it in the past, and it actually is interesting way to navigate your files. It uses a type buffer system where if you hit the escape key, you can type a command, and it shows across your screen, and you can execute that command on, and you can use like a regex like you do in the shell, to operate on the files in the folder that you're currently browsing, which is kind of a neat little thing when you are trying to, you know, sort through a list of files and there's a whole bunch of them there, and you can just hit escape ls space star.jpg and get a list of all of your JPEG images in that directory. So, I mean, it's an interesting little file manager, and I do encourage people to check it out, but there's a lot of people that just don't feel it suits their needs or their taste.
So somewhere between Nautilus and, what is that, X-Cruise?
I haven't used X-Cruise, actually.
Yeah, that's pretty small, I think, download, but it's pretty interesting. You just fly through your file system as it was a universe. It's not really practical.
I don't know if it's quite that experimental, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, most of the features that I found in with evidence, they are practical if it fits the way that you like to work.
Uh-huh.
But it just if it doesn't fit the way you like to work, it's not going to work for you.
It looks really interesting.
And it does take a little getting used to. Yeah, it is definitely very interesting. And it has some really nice features, like if you're using access control lists, it does have built-in support for those, so you can edit your access control lists from the file manager. It does thumbnail support using the free desktop thumbnailer standard, so that if you are browsing using evidence and it thumbnails your files for you, when you open them up in your GNOME app, that they won't have to be thumbnailed again and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it tries to play nice with all of the standards, but does some things a little bit different that, you know, some people really like and others don't like quite so much.
So getting back again to Illicit, is that just a proof of concept, or are you actually going to go somewhere further with Illicit?
Illicit, that's the, I know it's kind of silly that I don't know what it is.
It's
that's the picker for the colors?
Yeah, color picker and zoom tool.
And screenshot, yeah, that's right. Illicit is very cool. That one is written by Brian Mattern, and he... did a really nice job with this. It's great for web development, and I don't know if he plans to change anything more with that. It's just one of those things that is, if you're doing working with images and websites and you need to do color matching, it's fantastic because you just click on this thing and you get a exact zoom in of your border or whatever you're working on. You can then, you know, compare your pixel by pixel, side by side look. And then even save that for later so that if you don't want to have to look that up again, you can come back and just open up Illicit again, and there you go. It's right there. And as far as, like, color matching goes, it shows you the values, the pixel values in RGB and HSV and hex, so that you can actually, you know, take that value and plug it into your CSS or HTML or EDC if you're doing an edge out of it, or, you know, whatever graphical program you're using for design, it's really handy. You know, and like I said, I don't know if he's planning to do much more with that, but just as it is, it's a pretty useful little tool.
It's got a lot of interesting things going on there.
Yeah, definitely. And that Illicit tool is also an example of Edge being used in a nice way. It's similar to, like I said, the Xtend Lite client, with kind of a themed look to it. And that whole skin can just be replaced or redesigned, editing one file that is not extraordinarily complicated. It's a series of images tiled together in a layout. And it's a little bit easier than doing like a Winamp theme where you have a big bitmap with all kinds of separate image areas that you have to give the coordinates into your theme file and then tell them where to map those onto your theme. It's all separate images, and you only lay out where they want to go in your theme. And you can do relative layouts, so if you say you want this label to be right next to this image, you just tell it to be right next to that image, and wherever that image goes, the label's going to follow it, which makes it a lot easier to do some theming stuff.
Now,
a couple image viewers that do that, and then there's also some Ruby bindings for this stuff for people that are really into Ruby, and some kind of cool work has been done creating like an alternate syntax for generating these Edge files using Ruby itself as the programming language. I haven't used it too much, but the little bit of it that I've seen is it's kind of a nice way to work with it. And the guy that developed it has done some good work with generating some nice Edge files and themes out of that work. So And then also there's a XMMS2 front end that uses it called Euphoria, and that is a kind of a nice little image player that can be fully themed using these Edge files. And that's written in Ruby, too.
Now, if I wanted to change my desktop image on Enlightenment DR17, now I have a bunch of files that I've run a script on that have converted them into EDJ files, and they're in my .e/e/backgrounds directory. But when I go to that little tool on the menu to change my background, they don't show up. You still there? Oh, uh-oh. What did I do, Alan?
It still says connected over there.
I know, but I think I did something I shouldn't have.
What did you do?
I did something bad. Start talking, Alan.
What did you do, Dad? We'll just relate this to the audience as you're fixing whatever it is you did.
I screwed something up on my window manager.
All right, Dan broke the window manager. And it's a hard crash too. Will this be a reboot or not? Survey says. Dan broke the system.
It's not a reboot. It was something I shouldn't have.
What were you doing?
Screwing around with the backgrounds.
So.
shouldn't have been doing that.
Pretty much the same. Hello?
Hello? We're quite echoing.
Hello?
Are they in?
Hello? Be here. The user is then going to this one. Isn't all that you can use a different
technical difficulties. Please stand by. What happened?
I want people to hear a stream. To set up a
All right, well, I have no clue whether this is still working or not, but Dan broke everything. So while he fixes it, there may be silence. We don't know. the audio was so terrible. I don't know if that was coming over to stream or not. But, I mean, it was just bad. Actually, it was coming over to stream, but... So have you fixed the X?
That's so fine! Up back. Red's on.
You hear what it sounds like? It's a
We hear...
Does everyone talk among yourselves while we figure out what the hell's going on here?
What
the It sounds like the show on drugs.
Oh.
So we've got the desktop going up for a reboot.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That's
what's this one here?
Huh? That's the server.
Okay.
Yeah, I shouldn't have been doing what I was doing remotely. And that'll happen.
So what are you doing? You were changing backgrounds, or what were you doing?
Yeah, I was playing around with the background thing. And I don't know exactly what the whole dealio is at.
I don't know, but man, it was a trippy echo going
yeah,
on there.
Yeah, it was. I have been asking Nathan about why, you know, I have a script that changes my background automatically, and what it ended up doing is there's a file, which I can't remember exactly what it is that you need to run, which will automatically change your background, a command, and it creates EDJ files, and I have a whole bunch of these in my Enlightenment configuration directory under the background, and my question was going to be to him is, how come when I bring up the background changer, it doesn't, you know, those aren't listed in there. I thought they were at one time, but I don't see them anymore. And I was playing around with doing that, and I closed the background manager, and then I brought it back up again, and I did something I guess I wasn't supposed to, and I horked things up, and Enlightenment went down, but it didn't mess up the whole system, so to speak. Or I don't know. I guess the X10 audio crashed and didn't
oh, yeah,
yeah, it kept a hold of the audio. So, I'll let Alan talk while I finish logging into my machine over here.
I was doing the video for this. All right. Dan breaks the machine video. He ruins the show for tonight. We're usually doing this about 5 minutes before the show, doing all the reboots after we break things. As we all videotape your passwords there.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, don't worry, I can't see your fingers typing. Although I'm sure someone would dissect this.
Look,
it's Dan's. It's Dan 123, my God.
Yeah,
and 1, 2, 3.
All right, here we go, Alan. Tell me how.
Survey says. Ready for some more trippy audio here. Oh, picture of the hyper dog.
Sound better now?
Nobody's talking right now. Hey, we got a busy tone over there.
What?
We have a busy tone going over.
A busy tone? Ugh. What the heck?
I think everybody when you rebooted the machine, you kicked everybody off the Asterix.
No, I didn't reboot the Asterix. The Asterix was never, and that wasn't the server. That was my main workstation.
Oh, I'm sorry. Seems to be dead, Jim.
Well, I must have horked something up big time. Holy moly! What did I do?
Well, he's still got the stream running, so they can hear us. We just, there's no connection to the Asterix box, though. So. Did you turn back on the, oh, yeah, you turned on the audio for that.
Yeah, everything should be running fine. I mean, what the heck?
Hello. Welcome to Skype.
Well, see, Skype's working.
That's coming through. Well, we can hear the tones. So the tones are working.
Yeah. Tones are working, but... There we go. Hello?
Hello?
How you got...
There's a huge delay going on.
Yeah, there's some kind of massive delay going on.
Well, there was a good reason to cancel this month. Linux kernel Oscars. We should maybe rip on it.
What?
Talk slower.
There's an article in this Linux journal that I can fill it in this.
What? Dude.
What's that, huh?
Napier
toggle and something to me.
That ain't working. You know what I think is going on? Yeah, I'm broken good. So I think what's happened is we are now fighting for bandwidth with everything else going on. Whereas I think prior to the show with the asterisks running, it was established. And well, now we are. But no, that doesn't make any sense because the Skype call went through. Link.
Yeah.
Disconnect and come back in.
Moment. Drop down.
Drop as well. Anybody.
Now, how you. What the heck?
Well, but this uses a whole lot more bandwidth. Can you kick everybody else off? Kick everybody else off the band?
Off of what band?
Off of the LinuxLink.net.
Kick them all off?
And just have the outgoing streams.
If I did that, I'd have to shut down the server, the Icecast.
Oh, you can't just boot people off?
I don't think so. Well, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to fall off.
How are you?
Oh, well, it was good audio up until
until I screwed it all up.
Damn, I thought I was doing so good here.
Shut up, Alan.
No, I'm sorry.
Hold on. Let me try one more thing.
Maybe we want to disconnect Asterix for a few moments. As Dan massively types away.
Is that better?
Better?
No.
Well, this is probably going to kill everybody on the asterisk, but let me see if that's what's doing it.
Is asterisk still on?
Yeah, it's still running.
Okay.
Is that any better?
Obviously not.
Hello?
Well, I kept it quieter. What you do?
Hello? I killed the asterisk for one. Is that your phone ringing?
Yeah. It's the wife. I'm not worried about it right now.
All right. See if this makes a difference now.
drum roll, please.
Killed everybody.
You're enjoying that too much.
Hello?
Hi.
Nathan.
Yep, I'm here.
Look at that. Nathan's on, and it sounded great. I apologize for that, Nathan.
No problem.
What had happened was, my question to you was, how do I get the backgrounds to show up in the background chooser? And I was playing around with that through a VNC session,
mm-hmm.
and I did something it didn't like, and it crashed out of Enlightenment. And things went a little crazy after that, so I apologize.
Right. That's okay.
Now, I mean, that question still stands there, though. When sure. I look at my my E configuration directory, my .E, yeah. and then under E again, and in my backgrounds directory,
right?
There's a bunch of backgrounds in there, but they're not showing. Are they supposed to show up on that menu or that little configuration tool? I thought
they should show up on. Yeah, they should show up on there. One thing I've noticed in the past is that when you've updated the window manager and not updated the tools, sometimes they get a little out of sync because the communication mechanisms between the two aren't lined up anymore. So whenever you do an upgrade of Enlightenment, make sure you update that eUtils, which includes that configuration utility. And that has solved the problem for me in the past when I've seen stuff like that.
All right. So let me ask you a few standard questions since I wasted so
sure.
much time screwing around.
No problem.
what do you use for your main development environment?
Right now, I am primarily using OS X. I kind of have a few different systems going, though. I run OS X, a couple of Linux boxes, PowerPC. And then I have an x86 Solaris server and a Sunray that I run off of that just to kind of test out different working environments.
So when you're coding, are you using a specific IDE or?
No, I use a good old VIM.
Oh, VIM, there you go. Link's going to love you for that.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Not an Emacs guy, huh?
I tried to use it for about 2 weeks in college, and it felt like my hand was like gonna fall off. So I gave up on that. All those control characters didn't fit well for me.
Yeah, now all you have to do is, figure out how to cope with Escape Pinky from using Vim.
Yeah. All depends on your keyboard layout. Most of the time, it's not too bad.
I'd ask you what your favorite desktop environment is, but I guess I already know what that is. Fluxbox,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you do. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Enlightenment, DR.
I've tried Fluxbox a few times, and it seems okay, but I just, I know what I like, and I stick with it. And being a developer and all, you can't really switch.
So you're a big fan of OS X, Apple's new hardware.
I like it. I actually prefer using Enlightenment a lot of the time, but there's a lot more nice, easy, GUI tools on OS X when you need to do something quickly. And I don't know. I've used Enlightenment in other Linux environments for a long time, and I'm pretty torn on what to use. In fact, when Apple goes to x86 completely, I'm probably going to just install Linux or NetBSD or something on all of these PowerPC systems.
Now, I use, at work, primarily use OS X. I also use X11 mm-hmm. on top of it. One of my biggest complaints with that is there's really no copy buffer between the two.
Yeah, that's a pain. And I kind of have a stupid little hack around it. I have a terminal open, and I run a lot of stuff in screen. So I do a screen-x, and so now you can copy through the terminal and get it into your X11 session where you're running the other side of screen.
That's a damn good idea.
It's not very clean, but it actually is kind of a nice, you know, jump buffer to get into your to get your stuff copy and pasted between it.
Are you running do you run GIMP at all?
Yeah. I actually run that off my Solaris system though, and and then just do a remote display with this system.
Because I use GIMP a lot, and I use it on OS X too. And I've noticed for sometimes it seems to take forever to start up under OS X. Just wondering if you ever knew.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. I have run it on OS X natively before, and it did seem. I noticed that as well. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've even tried that, so I couldn't say. It still does that.
So what else do you do in your spare time besides play around with, or actually not play around, develop for Enlightenment?
Not actually that much computer related. I, you know, just bought a house a couple of months ago, or 3 months ago, so I've been doing a lot of work on the house and just kind of trying to disconnect for a while. I work quite a few hours every week, so and between that, working on Enlightenment stuff, I pretty much try to disconnect and spend some time with my wife and not be in front of a computer screen.
Well, congratulations on the house, though.
Heresy, I say.
Heresy.
Yeah.
Now, are you a developer for your day job?
Yeah, I web development primarily, some systems administration, a lot of troubleshooting as far as some higher-level tech support, but primarily on Linux servers, sometimes Solaris servers, and every once in a while a Windows server, but I try to get that when I can.
So no kids yet?
No kids yet.
Planning on it?
Three cats.
There you go.
Maybe someday, you never know.
Yeah, kiss your development time goodbye then.
Yeah, that's baby. What I figure.
You'll be going like gangbusters on Enlightenment 17, and all of a sudden it'll just stop dead, and that'll be the indication right there.
Yeah, all the developers have kids all of a sudden, and it just stops.
That's it. That is it. That'll do it.
That's what I've heard.
That's what's killing.
Hasn't been an issue yet.
This is killing the tech show. It's all these kids things, right, Link?
It is, man. Tell you what, following your kids around is a full time job.
Yeah. All right. So anything else you want to add there, Nathan?
You know, I just want to, you know, encourage people to maybe download the live CD, check it out, see what they think. You know, if there's any developers out there that want to get involved, we're always looking for good people to kick in some code and debug and all that kind of good stuff. And that will definitely speed up that release process if they want to see a release come up soon.
Now,
so what you're saying is you're looking for single developers, right?
Yeah, there you go. Single developers, maybe some fourth-year students, fifth-year students. They always seem to have good free time while they're putting off homework.
Now, do you have a degree in computer science or computer programming?
Yeah, I do. I got a degree in computer science and math.
Okay. So you were saying that your day job sounds like you primarily do web development. Is that under like Perl, PHP?
Mostly PHP. There is some Perl involved, depending on what we're doing. I got started in Perl myself, but a lot of people really like PHP, so. And I don't mind using it. They're just, you know, so close sometimes that I get a little bit confused which one I'm writing at a particular time.
So for people who don't come from a programming background that might want to contribute to Enlightenment DR17, what are you looking for? What would be available for them? Documentation? What?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of room for people that don't have a programming background. We're looking for people to do documentation. GetE.org has some pretty good docs up there, but they could always use help revising, expanding, and a lot of those are user documents. We definitely need developer documentation. In our CVS, we do have the Oxygen API documents for all the libraries, and we do have two or three different books started that describe how to use the libraries and kind of give examples and walkthroughs and how to get up started and go from there. But those get outdated because development occurs at a fairly rapid pace. So sometimes, you know, we have to go back and say, all right, we're going to take a week and update all the documentation because it's just getting too out of sync with where CVS currently is. So people that are good with good writing skills, you know, website documentation, books, API documentation, examples, tutorials, all that kind of good stuff we need. Another really big thing is themers. We need people with some graphical skills to do more themes and some interesting takes on different themes, especially if you have an animation background. It's a fun little project to get involved with because we're trying to provide the tools for people with animation skills to take advantage of them and use them in their everyday environment. You know, and people tend to go over the top sometimes when they do animations for their GUIs, and put a really nice subtle, you know, glow effect or pulsing or something to give you a key about how you're interacting is often really useful. You don't need to go over the top, but we definitely need people to help out with those kinds of design issues.
Awesome.
And if nothing else, there's always testing it out and reporting bugs. Just we need good bug reports.
We're going to have to cut off of Bin Rev.
Good night, Bin Rev.
Yeah, good night, Bin Rev.
As soon as I get to the right button.
Survey says it's still not the right button.
There we go. Good night, Bin Rev.
Just don't push the same button that you pushed like 15 minutes ago, Dan.
Goodbye, Bin Rev. Good riddance. You know what? In the future, we need to be aware that there is a bit of a delay there, a buffer. So when we cut off a Bin Rev, we usually cut off like right on or a minute after, that those people are already gone before we even get near to cutting off Bin Rev. Saying about we're cutting
off. I'm back.
And now the show's going to go right in the toilet again.
That's all my fault.
So do you guys have anything else you want to talk about?
No, man, we talked for 20 minutes while you were doing your kernel compiler or whatever.
That's great. Nathan, are you running any Linux on those PPC machines?
Any what?
Any versions of Linux on your...
I'm not right now, actually, primarily because the desktop workstations my wife needs to be able to use, and while I can configure an environment for her, she does a lot of movie stuff, and I haven't found any good tools that rival iMovie and Final Cut Express for her to use.
Right.
And you know, I don't want to take that away from her. And then as far as my laptop, there is a my Airport Express card is not supported, so that really defeats the purpose of having a laptop in my mind if I can't use it for wireless. So if that were supported, I probably would have Linux on that system.
Now, see, on my PowerBook, of course, the I do run Linux on it.
Okay.
And the Airport Extreme card isn't supported. The trackpad is no longer supported.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the new versions. This is a brand new PowerBook, okay, which really stinks.
Okay.
The function buttons aren't supported.
You have a Mac Mini, Dan.
Yeah, in a sense, it's an oversized Mac Mini. Oh, and the sound doesn't work either.
I like my Mac Mini though.
But other than that, it works great as a desktop. You plug in all these external devices, USB and FireWire work great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got enough desktop systems around that I don't really want another one. So, and OS X, I can do my development work in. It's got, you know, it is Unix, and I'm comfortable doing what I need to do to get that up to a point of development in it. So, I don't, you know, It works.
Well,
sometimes not as much motivation to code when things are already working, though, when you have a nice GUI as it is.
But. Yeah, you know, as much as people say they love OS X and the GUI interface OS X, I mean, it's all right. I turn everything off on it. I mean, I don't like the dock. I don't like, I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, well, like I said, I spend about probably 75% of my time in full screen X and the other 25% in a web browser, you know, under OS X. So there's not a whole lot of things in the GUI that attract me to it more so than what I already have.
Was
there's only so much eye candy can do for you until you finally figure out that you need to get some work done.
Exactly.
And you need to get it out of the way.
Yep. That's definitely true.
No.
And, you know, with enlightenment, that's another thing that, you know, people always say, you know, you have eye candy. What does that do for you? Well, it only gets you to a certain point. It's nice to have. I think it makes working in the environment a little bit easier, but it also needs to be able to get out of your way. Like with OS 10.4, their widgets that they have, I don't use those really very much at all, because to use them, you have to switch over into a special mode where they all fly in outside of the screen, where if I really wanted that information, I would probably want it out available to switch to quickly all the time, or just off on the side of the screen where I don't have to look at it, but I can look at it out of just moving my eyes, not doing some special key combination.
Kind of bumming me out is looking towards the future of multimedia, and with all the DRM crap they're throwing into it, and support for that on anything other than Apple or Microsoft products seems kind of shaky and difficult.
Yeah, I guess we could always hope that some of those big players like IBM and HP that are sort of in the Linux market can at least pull for us a little bit on that, but yeah, I agree. It's not a good looking situation.
It sucks, man. To develop the crap on Linux and then you can't play it back on Linux.
Yeah.
Bumming me out. Bumming you out, Alan.
Of course.
You're confused.
Oh yeah, well, I'm watching something else as well.
That's good. Pay attention.
Well, I am paying attention, but. I sort of drift in and out sometimes. Yeah, I've been up since 4:30 this morning, so.
I had to get up at 6:45 this morning.
Boo.
On my vacation day to go into work.
Oh, you're on vacation.
I was supposed to be on vacation all week, but I went into work today.
Well, that's just wrong.
I know, it was. Did you ever see Clerks?
No.
You never saw the movie Clerks?
No.
What the hell's wrong with you? Did you see Clerks, Nathan?
Of course.
Of course.
I'm sorry.
I shouldn't even be here Clerks today.
So why are you here then?
Because they called me. Because on my vacation day, I'm at home and I get called all the time.
Well, turn
you
want to
know
phone.
Why?
Turn off the phone.
Because Cisco sucks. That's why.
Yeah. Turn off the phone.
I don't see how it
powers the
internet.
You've got to make yourself unavailable.
Yeah, well. They call me, well, everything's slow. Because the Cisco went down again. Decided to break. Cisco. Cisco's ruined my vacation. Taking a damn week and a half to troubleshoot a switch.
You're not paying enough, that's why.
No, we pay. Man, we pay it. Oh, holy mackerel. It's like $30,000 a year. In
job security, Dan.
In what is it, their maintenance program. We're supposed to have next day delivery. Only it's been a week and a half of them troubleshooting. But that's okay, because I've been troubleshooting a Novell problem with Novell for about
three weeks
now. Yeah. You know, so go figure. I don't know. They could, you know what? You know what's replaced the Cisco switches? Two 3COM switches that are about
20 years old.
10 years old. And they're working like a top.
Damn.
Don't get me going, Alan. Don't get me going.
I won't because I'm logging out. So.
Alan's the instigator.
Yeah.
I'm instigating because it's time for me to go home. So.
Hey, Pat. You'll appreciate this. I was playing around with Kino this past
week.
What'd
you think?
No, I like it very much. I do. I like it very much. Lo and behold, I noticed that when you actually scroll down on that transitions page, there's the audio stuff at the top, but there's a little scroll bar. You scroll that down, there's a whole bunch of video transitions in there. I never
you
knew
didn't
existed.
Know that?
No, because I never noticed that. Because you actually have
nice.
To, yeah, the scroll. Now, I did have, because I've never read any of the documentation for Kino. It's just been on the fly crap.
Typical Dan.
Yeah. So I did have difficulty applying the transitions because I wanted it to do it between, like, I took the video of Alan and I took the video of my daughter and I wanted to transition in between them. And I kept wanting to put the transition at the beginning of one of the videos.
You can change that.
Yeah, I know. There's a thing to go to click it on the end.
I just did a video of one of the, I have a son who's almost 2 years old, and I have a ton of videotapes that I've recorded over the past 2 years, and I'm just slowly going through them and editing them, burning DVDs of them. And I just did the second one, went from the time he was like 3 months to about he was 6 months, and I used Kino, and it worked pretty well. I was doing transitions. The only problem that I had was on certain transitions, the program would bomb out on me. But on the main transitions that I used, like the fade in, the letterbox, all the main ones, they all worked okay. It was only when I tried to use one of the fancy transitions, I forget what they call it, chromide or something like that. It's like this really weird transition. It bombed out on that one, but all the other ones worked okay. And then to burn it to DVD, I took Dan Dennedy, what he suggested, the exports tab. They have a bunch of scripts in there where it'll burn to a DVD, and it'll put in chapter indexes wherever your scenes cut over, all automatically. So basically, you can create a DVD directory and then just burn it with K3B, and the only thing it doesn't have is a menu system. So if you don't care about menus, it's fine. You know, the Kino does quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
Good night, Alan.
What'd you say?
I'll bring the video that I did next time so you can check it out, what I did with it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Well, I'm definitely going to bring the video camera. One of the things we were talking about, I guess we can announce, is we're offering CDs of the old episodes, MP3s, and OGs. One of the other things that we're going to do is we're going to offer a DVD. The DVD will have MP3s, all the OGs, the little videos that we've shot so far. And I think I'm going to film maybe one or two episodes in the studio while we're doing it. And I'll edit that down and put the aura files of that on the DVD. So we're going to be offering the DVD for sale pretty soon. And we'll announce it on the main page, probably.
Hours of excitement.
Should be fun, though.
Yeah, Alan.
I'm doing... I burned all the volume ones, which is basically episodes 1 through 52, using the disc that you had given me way back when.
Yeah.
I created 50 of those, so those are done. And now I'm doing the volume 2, which is from episode 53 forward. I can only fit till episode 98 because the shows have gotten longer, the more recent shows. We used to do only an hour, now it's an hour and a half. And sometimes it's an hour and a half plus, like tonight even. So the files have gotten bigger, so I can't fit as much on the CDs. But the good news is the DVD's got plenty of room, and we could just dump everything on the DVD. And the DVD's only marginally more expensive than the CDs. The only reason why someone would want to go with the CD is if they don't have a DVD drive. Right?
Yeah, and then you just tell them to shut their mouth anyhow, right?
No.
I guess we better... What?
No, but Kino's pretty good, man. Once you get into it and you start learning it, it's pretty robust.
Have you guys used Final Cut Express at all?
No.
How,
when I was doing...
What was that?
Have you used Final Cut Express? Have you used that?
That's on OS X.
Yeah,
I have used Final Cut.
Windows.
I have used
Final Cut. Similar thing.
Yeah.
How does Kino compare to, like, between that and iMovie?
Well, you know how easy iMovie is? Did I lose everybody?
No, right, I'm still here. Oh,
okay.
I'm still here. Cut out for a sec.
All right. You know how easy iMovie is? Well,
yeah.
Kino is I guess striving to be close to that. It's not like iMovie easy yet.
Okay.
There is the full functionality of Kino is probably not on par with iMovie yet either. I would say there's still, you know, it still has some way to go, but there's a lot more export capability out of Kino, number one, than compared to iMovie. Now, I've never used Final Cut Express, but I have used Final Cut Pro, and that's a pretty heavy-duty application. So, I mean, you know, what you can do in Final Cut Pro is you know, years ahead of what you can do in iMovie, and definitely far surpasses what you can do in Kino right now.
Yeah, the Express version is just strips out a few features.
Right.
When I used to do it on Windows, I was using Yuli DVD Studio, and the video editing in that wasn't anything special. The only thing that it did that was easy and convenient was, you know, doing the menuing and everything.
Have a good one. Alan's leaving, everybody. So long.
Good night, Alan.
I walk you out, but they're giving me
But Yuli DVD Studio is a $200 product. You know, Kino is free.
It's free open source,
But you can do a lot with it, you know. If you want to do menuing and stuff, there's other applications out there like QDVD Author. Varsh is another one that's Java based, and then there's also DVD Styler as well.
Okay.
I mean,
you know, and those programs, you import the MPEG files.
Yeah, Kino's something to definitely check out. I mean, if you have a fairly, you know, robust machine, particularly for the rendering purposes, you know, it's, again, once you get it up and running, it's pretty easy to use. And if you're familiar with iMovie or even Final Cut Express, it's probably pretty self-explanatory for using Kino.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question about iMovie. Is iMovie just QuickTime or is it also MPEG 2? I guess it's MPEG 2 when you do a DVD.
It can export to MPEG 2.
Okay. Are those the only codecs supported?
From there, yes, but if you buy QuickTime Pro, you can open the files and then re-export them to a lot of different formats.
And how much does that cost? Do you know?
$25.
Yeah, it's not that expensive.
I've never tried the main actor. That's another one that they offer in Linux. But that one's $200.
I tried the demo version of that a few years ago. It was a little buggy because I think it wanted to run specifically on Red Hat, and they only made a RPM available for it. So I tried to run it on Slackware, converting the RPM to a Slackware package, and it ran, but it would crash more on a more regular basis than Kino or Broadcast 2000, which is another one I was using at the time that I tried out Main Actor.
Now that became Cinelera, right?
Broadcast 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah, it became Cinelera.
That's a beast.
Yeah, you're telling me.
They have a new release of that, and supposedly it's a little more functional as far as the codecs they use. I know the old version of Cinelera, you can only use AVI, but it seems the new version is going to support multiple codecs that you can import to.
Yeah, I've been able to import AVI, digital video, and I believe I've also been able to do movie, QuickTime movie, and MPEG imports into there.
What about raw digital video?
Yeah, it does. It does do raw digital video, and also. Have you ever tried Cinelera, Nathan?
No, I haven't actually. I'd heard it's pretty beastly, so
yeah.
I hadn't gotten that far.
Take iMovie, smash it together with Final Cut Express, and beat it against the wall three or four times, and run it over with your car. And there you got Solera. That's a, yeah, that is. I mean, but it's extremely powerful.
You just got to know what the hell you're doing.
Yeah, I think the documentation for that is has come a long way. There's a, what is it, Cinelera.org or something like that, now that, that has a lot of good, you know, resources for it. Well, you know, it's kind of like learning Blender. Blender used to be,
okay.
You know, back in the day when Blender was just getting going, there was a, you know, the documentation was all right, but it was still tough to learn.
Yeah. In my case, it's primarily my wife that does a lot of the video editing. So when I, you know, I'm looking at these applications and I see a screenshot that looks like a fairly advanced user interface, I pretty much say she's not going to have the patience to sit down with that for, you know, 30 hours just to learn how to place a video
right.
or something like that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, for ease of use, iMovie, man, it really has it in the bag there. Definitely.
And I did have her running some Linux for a while, and I'd, you know, given her a couple different environments, Enlightenment and KDE, and while she could get around, it was one of those situations where she couldn't always do what she wanted to be able to do when it came, you know, to things like movie editing. She had to wait for me to get home and, you know, set it up for her or something like that. So, you know, OS X has kind of given a good combination of the power of Unix, and, but something nice and easy. For her to get around in.
Right.
I got my wife using KDE, and she's getting into it. But she's technical. She's an AS400 admin.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So she's pretty quick when it comes to learning new things.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife's pretty non-technical, but she has learned quite a bit over the years just from being around the talk.
What's the job market like for your wife? I mean, is there a lot of AS400s still around?
I don't know. Well, she's not working now. She's taking care of my son for the most part.
Yeah, I know, but
yeah, there are a lot of AS400s around, actually.
Banks use them a lot still.
Manufacturing uses them. That's where she worked. She was in manufacturing.
So I know they have an AS400 at work for their payroll and everything, and they've been talking about trying to move that over to a Windows system, and I'd be like, man, you don't want to do that. The damn thing runs forever, though.
Yeah, those things. IBM stuff runs, man. Like mainframes. You know, they're talking about getting rid of mainframes forever. They're not going to go away anytime soon. You know, businesses have too much money invested in them to get rid of them. What they're doing now is they're doing virtual partitions and putting Linux on them.
Right.
You know, so they can get rid of a whole bunch of servers.
I gotta start closing.
Have you guys checked out?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Checked out. Have you guys checked out Solaris Zones at all?
Solaris what?
I haven't. No.
Zones.
No.
It's kind of an interesting little. It's kind of like the virtual partitions and virtual machines, but it's, you know, kind of running within the same kernel, and so you're not running a whole separate environment. It's just a small partition within the same kernel. But they can't talk to the other partitions without using separate tools. So it's a little bit kind of a hybrid between your multi-user system and your virtual partitions between operating systems. So kind of something interesting you might want to take a look at.
Link will have a report on it for next week.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
You got your Solaris systems over there.
No. Well, I have some. I have quite a few Sun machines over here, but I don't have any of them running Solaris right now. What I would really like to try, though, is I'd like to get a really decent x86 machine and try Open Solaris on that. It's supposed to be running really nice at this point.
Yeah,
I haven't
one
had
of our,
time to do anything yet.
One of our longtime contributors is for Enlightenment is an Open Solaris developer too, and. He's always talking about these new features that are coming out, and it's like, wow, I wish I had that on Linux. It would save me so much time. And, you know, it's one of those things. Now that it's there and available to check out, why not take a look at it?
Right. Just procrastinating like usual and haven't had time, you know? Life
well,
gets
yeah,
in the
I
way.
Wasn't saying you particularly.
Yeah, sure you weren't.
Don't let him off the hook, man. You badger him to submission.
All right, come on, get on it.
I see how it's going to work. Uh-huh.
I mean, you're over there writing a whole window manager, and Link decides he's not even going to show up for the show tonight.
Right. It's all dependent on, you know, what you had for dinner last night, Dan.
That's it.
How thick the atmosphere is over there. You know, I got to stay here so I can breathe.
Hey, that wasn't me tonight. That was Alan.
Alan, no.
Yes. It was Grandpa.
He must have had he had the asparagus for dinner tonight.
That must have been it. I got to get going.
All right, we'll wrap it up.
Yes, indeed.
I got to go beat the wife.
Hey, Dan.
What?
One quick question. How'd it go with the donation button?
What do you mean, how did it go?
Have you got any donations yet or no?
Yeah, I did. Got one from this guy named Link.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's the first donation. They're not donations. They're gifts.
Gift.
It's a gift.
Gift. Yes. Even the button says gift.
It's a gift. Donation implies that you're going to get some kind of receipt and tax deduction for it, and that's not going to happen. However, the gifts are still greatly appreciated, right, Dan?
They are very greatly appreciated.
Pay for the bandwidth.
Or depreciated. No, appreciated yeah. very much. I want to thank you, Nathan, for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And, you know,
it was great having you on.
We'd love to have you come on again. In the future.
I'd be happy to.
Excellent. Keep checking out. I'm going to keep checking out Enlightenment, DR17, playing around with it because I'm really enjoying it. I'm going to even see if I can get it running on my OS X machine.
Okay. Good luck.
Why not? And Link and Pat,
lucky, sir.
Any closing comments? Or even Nathan, any closing comments?
No.
I guess we can't all do a remote show.
What do you mean?
We still have to figure out our bandwidth issues, I think, yeah.
Yeah, we're pushing up. Unless we cut everybody off the stream.
We're probably going to have to do that, yeah.
Yep, just feed the mirrors.
That's it. Well, we'll see what we have to do when we have to do it. All right, thanks a lot, guys, for coming on. Everybody else,
thank you.
Great week. We'll see you next week. Who's our guest next week?
I don't have anybody definite yet, but I might have the people from the Pegasus PPC, Genesee.
Oh, good.
That's what I'm trying to get.
All right. Well, if not, we could also call Jeremy.
Oh, no, man. You tell them they can't come on until they send us a demo unit.
Yeah, or pay their developer, supposedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can call Jeremy.
Yeah, I
all right, everybody, thanks for tuning in again. Right. Thanks for tuning in again to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 104, right?
That's it, 104. Brought to you by Menon.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, you know what?
Chapstick.
No, not yet. I had everything all lined up.
That was before your system crashed, right?
No, I had all the... Oh, yeah, I do have the closing music all ready to go. Ah, just had to find the right terminal it was in. Yay! All right, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. That's it for me. I'll see you guys later. Thanks, Nathan. Have a good week.
Good night, everybody.
Take care.
Crom. I've never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. No one, not even you, will remember if we were good men or bad. Why we fought or why we died. No. All that matters is that two stood against many. That's what's important. Valor pleases you, Crom. So grant me one request. Grant me revenge. If you do not listen, then the hell with you.
You know I want to tap that ass, right? So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.
And there you have it.